We got your host Steve Smee and the Mason, where we come to you straight with our Q&A. No bullshit, just raw, hardcore, uncensored.
Hello?
If I find you, I'm going to kill you.
Really? I can do that?
I'm going to kill you if I find you.
If you find me?
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now. If I catch you, I'm going to fucking use a meat tenderizer on your face so... So when you do it, your funeral people won't recognize you, you hot sucker.
That sounds dangerous. It sounds painful, too.
I'm going to use a meat grinder on you, all right?
Yeah, if you find me.
I have more respect for animals in the cages than I do you, you piece of garbage.
Oh, so that's why you're calling me wanting to talk to me. Sounds like maybe you have mommy issues.
Why don't you go fuck yourself and suck the pop into my fuck stick?
Is that what it is? Do you have mommy issues? Does she not love you enough or something?
I pray for sick people.
I mean, I know it's tough. I know it's tough. But they do have therapists and things out there for when, you know, you have anger issues and things like that.
Yeah, we got anger issues on this podcast, guys. We always love to start out with a positive light. We have five fantastic topics up ahead. And let's start with a relationship topic. Matt, this one's for you. He wants to know, I got in an argument with my girlfriend. Is it okay to go to bed angry? So what's your advice to this guy?
Oh, you know what? You don't want to. And that's what everybody will tell you. Is it going to happen? Sure it is. You know, I've done it plenty of times. But if it's not worthwhile, then don't, just get over it. You never know. Shit happens, right? All the cliches, you know, you never know when, you know, it'll be your last day or whatever. So, you know what? A lot of times it just takes time. And unless it's a big blowout, chances are when you wake up in the morning, you're going to be fine anyways. The two of you will just move on. You'll be happy again. So you're better off to not go to bed angry. And any couple you hear, you see that, you know, those couples that are like 95 years old, they've been together, married for like, you know, 65 years. They'll all tell you that, never go to bed angry. So I would advise not to, unless you have to.
Yeah, I my personal opinion on this is don't go to bed angry. Always work things out, because then you're going to wake up and one person's going to feel like, you know, the other person's mad at them and stuff. So I'd hash it out before bed. And get over it. So that's just my opinion. You know, and if you really love the person, you have to be flexible enough to just, no matter what, even if you feel that person is wrong, you have to be flexible enough to just let it go. So, you know, that can really cause a domino effect down the line, I think.
Steve, I got one for you now, because I know you don't put up with this shit. The guy wants to know, how does he overcome his jealous feelings when his girlfriend goes out with her friends?
Well, you shouldn't feel jealous if she's going out with her friends. Now, she's going out with an ex who is now a friend. That's a problem. Because to me, your ex are your ex. You should not have contact with your ex. And that's a huge red flag. If you're dating someone and she still communicates with her ex or lives with her ex, no. We don't play that game. Women emotionally attached to men. So there's absolutely no fucking reason she should have any communication with her ex. Unless they share a child, okay? And that's a complicated situation. And that's one of those things, unless she's like an incredible woman, and, you know, you have a kid as well and stuff, those are situations that you should be flexible. But in general, I don't recommend you date people who have kids because of the X factor. So if she's just going out with her girlfriends, you really need to let her have her own life. You don't have to do everything with her all the time. So let her go have a good time. If she's immature enough to go to clubs or bars and flirt with guys and dance with guys and stuff, then you shouldn't be in a relationship with her in the first place.
I see it more with the younger girls, you know, early 20s. They like to go out to the bars. They like to slut it up and wear the real short shirts and, you know, look real whorish, right? And if she's going out the door like that, yeah, you're probably not going to feel good about yourself. But maybe it's time to look at things then. That means she's just doing it for attention. And, you know, if you're giving her attention, there's no need for that. So, you know what? I also think it's something that as time goes by, you know, I guess it's somewhat normal to have those feelings at the beginning because there's a lot of unknowns. But as time goes by, you know, relationship grows, you trust each other, you know, you actually mature and grow up a little bit. You know, you won't have those feelings at all. Like, I never worry about my wife going out with her friends. You know, everybody needs that time alone. Think if you could never go out with your boys. You know, you need to go out with the guys once in a while and have a guy's night out. So it's kind of the same thing. You just got to have it. You got to get over it.
What is the sweetest thing you have ever done with your spouse? So, Matt, can you give us a couple really sweet things you have done for your spouse that really, really knocked her socks off?
That's tough. I'm right on the spot, and we don't pre-show. We don't practice for this shit.
You want me
guys
to go first and let you think about
no,
it?
No. Okay. No, you know what? Because one of them that comes to mind is just something that we recently actually talked about. It was on our Valentine's Day podcast. And you guys know I've been married a long time, 12 years now. So, you know, a lot of the good stuff is already taken. So I actually made a list and read it to her of all the things that I love about her and the reasons why I love her and all that. So that was a really good one. But I think, like, in general, if you can plan a surprise, it'll always go over well. I try to do that. It never works out. I tried to do that for my wife's birthday last year. Tried to plan a concert, and of course I booked it the day that it was there. We already had something booked, and I ended up having to sell the tickets. It was kind of a disaster, but jewelry's good too. Not the cheap shit. Like if it's a holiday or like a birthday or something where, you know, maybe you don't normally go all out, when she doesn't expect it, go all out, you know, and get the big expensive gift. But you can't do it all the time, right? And then just random, you know, flowers. Not all the time, right? Because let's be honest, flowers are a waste of money. But once in a while, it shows that you're really thinking about her when, you know, it's just a regular day. So I guess that's a few.
Yeah, don't over gift someone. There's a trick to it. You need to, you know, it's nice to give gifts, but if you're going out with a girl, you're getting to know her, and you give her gifts every date you go on, here's a gift, here's a gift, here's a gift. It's actually pushing a woman away because now she's like, you know, there's nothing special about it anymore. It's very disingenuous. So here's a trick you can do once you're dating someone a while and you're ever out and she's like, wow, I really like this, whatever. It can be anything, clothing, jewelry, some type of memento, something. And, you know, that, and basically you remember what it was, and then you go back and get it for her, and then you surprise her with it. So I'll tell you a story, because we have a couple minutes left in this topic, and this is what I did. I was living with a girl. We've been living together for almost a year. We've been together for about a year and a half, 2 years. And her bunny rabbits passed away. She had two bunny rabbits. They died really close, like 2 or 3 weeks apart. It's like when one died, the other one got so depressed that it died. Because those bunny rabbits have been together for like 10 years. And we were out buying sod for the lawn at one of those, you know, places. And they have these stone figures, you know, for, you know, they have lawn supplies and stuff. They have one of these stone things of two bunny rabbits hugging each other. And she was like, oh, that's so fun. She like, she had, that looks like this, you know, she named the two bunny rabbits that she had. But it was really, really expensive. It was, you know, a few $100. It was very pricey. You know how expensive those statues are. So I told her, I was like, no, sweetie, you know, we'll look on eBay. We'll look on Amazon. We'll probably get it cheaper online. And she was upset about it, whatever. So then, like, a couple weeks later, I went back to the place and I bought it. And I put it in her bathroom that she uses at home. And when she came home from work, that's the first thing she does is go to the bathroom, you know, take off her stuff and from work. So she walks in there. She's telling me about her day, blabbing on and on. She doesn't even notice the statue. Then she finally notices it and she just bursts into tears. And she's like, this is the most sweetest thing anyone's ever done for me. So that's a perfect example of something you should do. And she gave me the idea. See, women are very good at that. And as a man, you can succeed in any relationship or any marriage if you start learning to take women's hints, you know, of that they give you, of things of that they want, instead of forcing things on women, like buying women a dress, okay, that, because, you know, how do you know she's even going to like the dress, the color, the size, anything? But if she takes you to the store and be like, wow, I really like that dress, then boom, buy the dress. You see what I'm saying? Let the woman dictate what she wants instead of you forcing shit on her. All right, so we're ready for our next topic, Matt, and we're going to get into cycling steroids segment. So I'll let you start with a cycling steroid question.
Yeah, I got, you know what, I want to start off with this one because it's really good and it actually requires a little bit of thinking. So it says, with taking finasteride, the DHT blocker, what is it that causes the side effects? Is it the low DHT or the high estrogen that causes the dick not to work? So I really like that question. I'll just hit it quick because I don't know, Steve, if you've ever used a DHT blocker. I did a while back just because I thought it's what I should do to prevent hair loss. Turns out it's not the right thing to do. It should only be used, you know, I think medically. But it's a good question because I felt like garbage, you know, like it was more than like weak erections. It was libido too, right? It's everything you associate with DHT, you know, as far as the sex drive side effects are concerned, it's horrible. It's the worst of both worlds. You know, it doesn't work and you don't want it, you know, so it doesn't get much worse than that. I think to me, if I had to say between the two, the low DHT is going to be the main culprit here because yeah, high estrogen can have some, you know, some side effects, but there are guys that get really high libidos when they get high estrogen too, you know, and there's also guys that their dicks work fine, you know, but when your DHT is shot like that, you know, you're going to be in rough shape either way. So I tend to think it's probably more the DHT, but you know, in any event, I wouldn't recommend using a DHT blocker. Hair loss is going to happen. It's going to happen naturally. Are steroids going to, you know, speed it up? Sure, a little bit, depending how prone you are. But those side effects are just terrible.
Our next question is an AAS, anabolic steroid, confession. What is a confession of something that you've done in the past that you look back and you're like, fuck, maybe I regret that? So I don't have any huge steroid confessions. I think that I have a couple, though. The first one was when I used Dianabol and testosterone that I didn't use an AI. And that was something really, really dumb. I got some really, really bad advice on that because some people will say, oh, you should only use AI if it's really necessary. But that wasn't a smart decision. I got a lot of water retention. Another thing, confession, is in the early 2010s, I think back 2011, 2012, I ran Tren off and on for like 2 years. And I probably ran like 4 cycles or 5 cycles of Tren in those 2 years. And let me tell you something, like I got bigger, I got stronger, but I also became more insulin resistant. I would, you know, have to eat every couple hours or it'd start getting shaky. And my cholesterol levels went to like 210, 220, 230. My blood pressure was up. And, you know, I was big, I was strong, but man, you know, it did a number on my health. So, you know, that was my confession. And since then, you know, doing that really made me become sick of Tren, to be honest with you. Another thing I, you know, really annoyed me was, you know, you get thirsty on Tren. It's like you drink water, you can never drink enough water. So, you know, those are my confessions.
Yeah, my main one, and it's because of the age. I'm 35, so I was at the perfect age when pro hormones were peaked. You know, they were so popular, extremely effective, and I was like 18 years old, right? So what do 18-year-old kids want? To do whatever they can to get the quick fix to get huge. So that's what I thought was going to happen. So I fucked around with a lot of these pro hormones. I'll give you a couple of the worst ones. Superdrol, which we know now really isn't a pro hormone. It's an anabolic steroid. Let's just put it out there. M1T. Methyl 1 testosterone, extremely toxic, felt like shit, couldn't handle it. I wasn't ready for it. I think I was taking like 5 milligrams a day, and that was enough to make, like, I just felt like I got hit by a truck. The lethargy, it was terrible. Obviously, I'm not getting any gains. You know, I'm working out. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm eating like shit because I'm 18 years old. So those were two of the worst ones. But I'll tell you the absolute worst I took was one test. And me and two buddies ordered it online from I don't even know where. It comes transdermal, right? So it's mixed in like an alcohol solution. And it's a pain in the ass to put on, right? Because you got to shower every night before you put it on. And then you got to put it on certain areas like your inner thighs, the forearms, your chest, your shoulders, triceps, anywhere that's, you know, really, really lean typically. Like you're not going to rub it on your ass. It's not going to absorb well. So I'm putting the shit on. It stinks. It's burning like crazy. Honestly, I feel like I'm in fire putting this stuff on. Within like 2 days, my balls are the size of like little raisins. But again, you know, a couple weeks in, I just kind of stopped doing it. I'm not getting any gains. So just a complete disaster messing around with this stuff at a young age.
Okay, man. I'll ask another one while you get it. How about what is the sweet spot for testosterone? So let me give my opinion on this. My opinion on this is if you're running testosterone solo, 500 milligrams is the cookie cutter dosage. I would say 400 to 500 milligrams is plenty. And you want to run an AI with it. But if you're stacking testosterone, I would go 200 milligrams or less. And just enough to kind of give it a little androgenic kick. So let's say you're running EQ or Primo or an oral like T-Bol or Anavar. And, you know, it gives you a little androgenic kick with those more anabolic compounds, more mild compounds. So you'd run the Primo or EQ at 500 or 600 milligrams a week, and then the testosterone at 200 milligrams or less. So that would be my sweet spot of testosterone. And if you're running an androgenic compound like Tren or Anadrol, I would argue to run tests at the bare minimum, or don't even run testosterone at all. So 0 to a TRT dose would be the sweet spot for testosterone in a situation. Matt, what is your experience on that one?
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, the problem is the labs. You know, you don't know from lab to lab what you're actually getting. So I think a lot of times guys only need 350, 400 milligrams a week. But I think a lot of times guys are running 500 and they're only getting 300, you know, because the lab's underdosed or whatever. So the key is, you know, I like the numbers that Steve gave you guys, but the key is to find a good source that you trust, you know, that you've got blood work on, so you know it's kind of dosed properly, because that's the important thing. I got a really good topic here. Let's have a little bit of fun with this one. So I'll tell you his original question, and then we can kind of go from here. So he just says, hey, I have five compounds. Create a cycle for me. No goals, no stats, nothing. So he's got S4, Osterin, Carterin, the basic triple stack. And then he's got LGD and he's got RAD. So, Steve, why don't we each, for our kind of where we're at in our own life, out of those five compounds, you can run one, you can run five. What would you do for your cycle?
Well, I like to run GW as a base because GW gives you fat loss and endurance benefits. So, what, you know, you can do cardio, but it boosts you. Your lifestyle, doing active activities, and then in the gym when you're working out, you're going to take less time between your sets, so you get a nice endurance boost. And then I'd stack one other or two other ones with it. So let's say you know LGD, so you run the GW 20 milligrams and then the LGD at 10 milligrams. Very simple. You could stack in S4 as well, or you could stack in Osterin. So I would do that, just GW with one or two other ones. Very, very simple. See how you like it, and then next time try something else, and then go from there.
So I'll tell you mine. As you guys know, I'm trying to fight through this shoulder thing. It's progressing, so I'm happy with that. So I would run Osterin for sure, and part of that's for the healing. And then the other part is for muscle maintenance. I'm not really looking to put on a lot of muscle right now, so I just want something more mild, but that's still going to do the job. So that's why I picked that one over, say, LGD or RAD. So I'll have Osterin. I'm like Steve. I'm going to run Carterin every time. I love the fat loss benefits. It helps me with my cardio. Not a huge cardio fan, so anything that you know makes it a little easier, makes me kind of enjoy it more, I'm going for. And I like S4 in there too. I have to run it at the 50 milligrams per day. When I get to 75, that's as high as I've gone. I really start to get some of those vision effects. I get a lot of like the black spots and it's not terrible, but it's not, I don't feel good. You know, I don't feel like it's safe if I were to have to drive at night. So I would go with those. Plus the S4 gives you a little bit of hardening, which I like when I'm, you know, trying to stay lean. You know, just gives you that nice look. So I'd actually just go with the triple stack.
So this leads into PCT. What should you do after SARMS PCT? This guy wants to know. He's running LGD and Osterin, and he wants to know what his PCT should be. So SARMS are minimally suppressive, but they are suppressive. Okay, GW, SR, Nutrabol, those are not SARMs, so they're not suppressive. Okay, so if you're running those, you don't need a PCT. But if you're running LGD, Osterin for a long period of time or at a higher dose, and RAD, so if you're running the actual SARMs, you will need a PCT. So the simple PCT, you want to run HC Generate Extra Strength ES. You can buy that from needtobuildmuscle.com, n2bm.com. 5 caps per day, split it. So you'd run 2 to 3 caps in the morning, 2 to 3 caps in the evening. That would be your PCT. Some guys like to run a small, tiny SERM dose, either Clomid or Novadex. So I personally think you can just get away with AC Generate ES. And that's been my experience. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think some guys like to run the Clomid because they feel safer. They feel like that's going to restart me if I'm shut down. And that's fine if they're running a low dose. I don't really have too much of an issue with it. It's probably not necessary. But if you're going to run it at, you know, 12 and a half, 25 milligrams a day, you're not really going to get those nasty side effects that we know can happen with Clomid. So I'm fine either way if you want to do that. But you definitely need that test booster in there. That's going to make you feel good. You're probably not going to notice anything from the suppression. Like, you're not going to feel bad or anything. You should feel perfectly fine. But you know what? It's a nice way to help you keep your gains that you just had from the cycle. So I think it's definitely important to do that. So I got another one on a need to build muscle supplement here that a guy sent in. This is a really good one. We talk about N-2-SLIN a lot with fat loss because it's a really good one. It's one I like, so I use it before meals. And I'll often recommend, you know, like stack it with Cardarin and, you know, make sure you're in a deficit. And it works really well. But this guy emailed in and asks, I have N-2-SLIN left over from when I was cutting. Now I'm actually ready to bulk. Can I use it in my bulking cycle? So, Steve, I'll let you hit this one because you're really good about insulin. You know a ton about that and kind of how it works. So is there a benefit to running a product like N-2-SLIN in bulking?
Yeah, actually there is. N-2-SLIN can be used either cutting or bulking. So the way you use it is before, you know, if you're in a surplus, you're trying to bulk, you have a big carb meal, you can take the N-2-SLIN, then have your big carb meal 30 minutes later, and it's actually going to shuttle in nutrients into your muscle. And that's actually going to help feed your muscle your meal. It's going to provide that. So it's similar to injecting insulin and then getting that, you know, blood sugar drop and then eating a high protein, high carb meal, and then that insulin helping your body store, you know, so you can get bigger. So N-2-SLIN can be used for that. And then on the flip side, N-2-SLIN can be used for cutting. So if you're eating in a deficit and then you eat, you're going to basically take your two or three largest meals of the day. You're going to take the N-2-SLIN at 2 caps 30 minutes prior to those meals. Or you can take one N-2-SLIN every 3 or 4 hours throughout the day. And that actually will work at basically blocking fat from being stored. So it really is a tremendous supplement. One of my favorites, actually, N-2-SLIN. So, and a lot of people, you know, they don't really understand it. But if you read the ingredients and you go on our forum and you read the articles on each ingredient, you'll understand the method to the madness. It really has an amazing array of ingredients that will block fat after, you know, when you eat. Because when you normally eat food, okay, it goes in your body, your blood sugar rises, your body goes into storage mode, and then it'll store food. It'll store your food as fat, to be used in a later time. Remember the way we evolved. We evolved, you know, feast or famine. So we'd get a meal, eat as much as we could, then the food would go bad. We wouldn't be able to eat it anymore. We didn't have refrigerators, you know, back then. We didn't have processed foods back then where it can sit there in the pantry. So our bodies are like that, our feast and famine. So if you're eating every day the way bodybuilders do and every 2-3 hours the way bodybuilders do, you're going to gain too much fat that way. And that's why half of Americans are at least 30% body fat. So N-2-SLIN is a great way to basically block that fat from being stored after a meal. So definitely take it before your meals, whether you're bulking or cutting.
All right, Steve, I got another quick one here. This one we get a lot. So it says, hey, I'm 21 and I got my first supplement. I got Ancient Strength creatine. Should I take it before or after my training? So what I like to do with creatine is, personally, I like to take it after. Does it matter? I don't think so. The only reason I take it after is because that's when I'm going to eat. So to me, it just makes sense. I'm not going to forget to take it. I'm going to have it there. I'm going to have it with my food. It's, you know, easy to remember to take it with your supplements. But what is it really? It's really just a few amino acids that are bound together. You get it through food anyway. So it's not like a stimulant where you're going to take it and your heart's going to race. It's not like a hormone that you're going to have to, you know, have different stable levels in your blood. It's just food. You know, it's in steak, it's in shellfish. You find it in tons of things you eat. So my advice, simplify it. Just take it with one meal, 5 grams a day. You don't have to cycle on or off. You don't have to load. Just take 5 grams a day for as long as you can. It's really healthy. Really cheap. There's lots of other benefits too besides bodybuilding. If you guys read, we have a good article on evolutionary.org, and there's a lot of mental benefits too as far as memory and different things like that. So I don't know. That's the way I would take it.
So the next question is, should I use PCT to also detox my organs? And this is actually a good question. And the answer is absolutely. PCT isn't just about your HPTA. And even if you're blasting and cruising or you're on TRT, you still need to worry about your organ health. You want to really freak yourself out, run blood work while you're on steroids. Seriously, go run blood work while you're on steroids. You'll notice that your organs will be extremely strained. I mean, I saw someone's blood work today. They're running pro-hormones, we're crying out loud. They weren't even running steroids. Their RBC was sky high. Their cholesterol was at 230, 240. Their blood pressure was sky high. Their liver values, the AST, ALT, were sky high. I'm like, dude, you know, you have to take care of your body when you're on cycle. And then in PCT, this is the opportunity to give your body, let your body balance itself. So you must run EntuGuard. You know, and EntuGuard is one of those things where when you're on EntuGuard during cycle, you'll notice, wow, you know, I feel so much better. Then you run out of EntuGuard. You run bottles out and you go on N2BM to order another one and you're like, shit, it's sold out. Because this shit sells out all the time. Matt and I both wanted EntuGuard a couple weeks ago. And Matt messaged me. He's like, Steve, did you know EntuGuard's out of stock? And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm like, damn it, I need a bottle. Luckily, you know, a couple weeks later, it was back in stock. I was able to buy a bunch. But guys, you need to make sure you keep EntuGuard on hand at all times. Keep an extra bottle in case they sell out, because they sell out all the time. It's a tremendous, tremendous supplement. Tell us a little bit more about EntuGuard, Matt, and then we'll move on to our next topic.
Yeah, it's so important because, you know, Steve brought up an amazing point right there about blasting, cruising, and TRT. We don't put any thought into that, right? We just assume, well, you're just replacing what your body should make. It's all leveled out. That's not true. It's not true at all. If you ask anybody that's on TRT, that is, it's through a doctor, it's done properly, they get blood work all the time because they need to make sure things are okay. They have to watch it. It will affect your heart, your cholesterol levels, your prostate, things like that, just from a TRT dose happen. So if you're running a cycle, even if you're not using orals, you absolutely need to run EntuGuard. It does, it's more than a liver supplement. We've talked about that before. It's going to help with, it's going to help you balance your cholesterol levels. It's going to help with the heart strain. You know, it's going to help with the prostate, all those things that we're stressed when we're using hormones, it's going to help with. And guys, this is how people, in quotes, die from steroids. They don't overdose, right? They don't die from one cycle. People end up dying because they abuse steroids for 20 years. And they think that, okay, I just did my last injection. I'm done. Everything's fine. I'm back to normal. But we know that's not true. That's where PCT and using EntuGuard and PCT is so important. When you're done, you know, you got esters in your system for weeks, depending on what you're running. Your organs just don't go back to normal overnight. You know, it takes months and months and months for your body to get back to where it was. Like, this is why I'm always stressing. Steroids are not candy. You know, this isn't like having a cheat meal that's not good for you and you feel like shit. This is doing damage to your body while it's in there. So you need to learn to do these things safely, cycle on and off properly, use all the supports. And that's where EntuGuard, probably the most important one. And Steve's not kidding. When that supplement is out of stock, I get this little panic in me. Like, I don't like it, you know, and it's not just for me. It's for the people that ask for my help. And I tell them, hey, this is what you need to get. And that's always on the list. So, you know, I want to make sure that's there for everybody. So, yeah, definitely one of the best things out there.
So let's get into some diet questions now. You know, and gosh, guys, it's so complicated, like the whole diet thing. So you really, you know, sometimes you just gotta like do things that work for you. So what's an example, Matt, of things that don't necessarily everyone says to do, but you do it and it seems to work for you when it comes to diet?
Well, a lot of you guys know I do intermittent fasting, and you know, that's one thing. But I think what I would say more than that, that seems to work for me, is to be in a deficit every day. It doesn't have to be big, but it has to be a deficit. And that's what I found. I feel the best. My diet, it's so much easier to stay on track because I feel everything's level when I eat that way for a long period of time. I don't lose muscle. And I know that's what everybody's worried about. You're not going to just all of a sudden turn into, you know, a little skinny guy because you're in a deficit, right? You're still eating enough. You're still training. You're going to maintain your muscle mass. You're going to look better. So for me, it's being in a deficit because nobody does that. You know, everybody looks at, well, what's my maintenance? Well, I'll eat that every day, you know, or I want to bulk. But try eating in a deficit, a small one every day, and you'll notice some really positive changes. What about you?
Well, I think I eat a lot less protein than the normal meathead. But you guys got to keep in mind, too, that I've been weight training for years and years, and I've built a big, big base. So if you're just a fucking skinny guy, you're like 120 pounds, and you're just skinny, and you have like 11-inch arms, you know, can you eat like I do and get in and build muscle? Of course not. You really need to eat more. So what I did is I put together two ebooks, and they're on Amazon, and you can go on evolutionary.org or elitefitness.com and look in my signature, Steve SMI. Look at my signature for the links, and I have a cutting book and a bulking book. So everybody's different, okay? So, you know, your brother might be fat and need the cutting book. You might be skinny and need the bulking book. So everybody's different. You're not going to be in my situation. So I'll give you an example. Today, I did not eat meat. I ate no meat at all. I had two eggs. That was my only protein sources that I had today. Okay, my other foods that I ate, I had some almonds, I had fruit, I had salad. That's about it. You know, that was my diet today. And I'm still muscular and I'm still strong. So that's kind of weird, you know, to a lot of people. But I don't know how much protein was in two eggs, but that was pretty much all my protein today. So, you know, that's a little different, and everyone is going to be different, guys, but it just depends on where you're at and your goals. So don't think that you have to follow Ronnie Coleman's diet or these pro bodybuilders, because if you do follow their diet and you eat all that food that they're eating, all that protein, all that meat, you're just going to get fat. You don't have their genetics. So you have to figure out what works for you, not copy what worked for Ronnie Coleman. So that would be my tip on that. So let me do another one. I know, Matt, you got a couple. This guy wants to, he's saying his social life is killing his diet. When he was married, he said it was easy for him to keep his weight off because him and his wife, they would never go out. But since he's been single, he's been going out meeting girls, meeting them, you know, for drinks, going to restaurants, you know, for dinners, and he wants help. So Matt, I'll let you take a stab at this one first. What advice can you give to this motherfucker?
So this is one where Steve and I are a little bit different on, alcohol in general. Steve doesn't drink ever, thinks that, you know, kind of, if you're into the fitness lifestyle, that you should, you know, decide that you're just not going to drink. And I respect that point of view. My point of view is a drink or two isn't going to kill you. So personally, what I would say to this guy is, okay, you're going on a date once a week, probably. If you're going to go out, if you're going to have drinks with a date, you shouldn't be getting drunk anyway, or you're an idiot if you're going to try to land this girl. One drink, maybe two. That's it. And if you're going to do that, stay away from the beer. Drink a clear alcohol like a vodka or gin or rum, something like that. And get it with a calorie-free mixer. That's 100 calories per drink. If you have two of those, 200 calories, not going to put you over the edge, okay? My advice is restaurant food is the problem. This is where you're struggling for two reasons. One, because it tastes great. And two, because there's a lot of shit in there that you're not aware of when you're ordering the food, the way that they cook it. They don't cook food in a restaurant the way we cook it at home. They cook it for flavor, for maximum calories, right? They're loading fats in there and not good fats. You know, they're loading in butters and things like that. When I cook a good steak at home, I don't need to load it in with butter. It's not necessary at all, right? I can cook it on the barbecue just fine, and I'm not using any, you know, type of butter oil at all. So my advice is when you're going on a date, make sure you order your food the way you want it. You know, if you don't want to look like, I don't know, if you don't want to look weird by saying, you know, can I, and being really picky, asking for 10 different things, just get a salad with some chicken in it or something. You're going to look perfectly normal. Get a water with your meal. Not a big deal. Stay away from the fatty foods. And you know what? If that's what she's going to get, don't even worry about it, right? You don't even know if you're going to be with this girl or where the date's going to go. So you have to worry about yourself. So to me, it's not that hard to control. You know, when you're at a restaurant, there should be an easy way out, you know, an easy option at any restaurant you go to. You know, if you, for example, if you, you know, get a salad, get your dressing on the side. It's not a big deal because they're going to put in like 2 cups of dressing, you know, and then you might as well eat a whole pizza instead because that's going to have less calories. So I don't know. That's kind of what I would suggest to do.
I would say, I mean, this guy, listen, you know, here's the bottom line. Let's say you are going to dinner and you want to pig out, okay? You're going to some gut food place, okay? And, you know, my advice is just don't eat all day. Just don't eat all day. And then this way, when you go to dinner, you can have a big meal and you're not going to, you know, it'll be much better. But if you already eat all day, then have a big meal on top of it, that's where you get yourself into trouble. And that's where you're going to really throw your diet off. But, you know, I got to say, like, Matt makes a good point. No matter where you go, no matter what restaurant you go, you can be creative and order something off the menu that's not that bad for you. Order a chicken salad with the dressing on the side. It's not going to be that bad. It's not going to be that many calories. And it's not gonna destroy your diet. It is a little weird on a date to eat salad though, because it is kind of a crunchy food. It's one of those foods you put it in your mouth and it's like half of it is in your mouth and you're trying to eat it. So I understand that, but maybe, you know, go on dates where you're not going to dinner. Meet her for just, you know, a drink or something and order a a drink that's not too bad. You know, so there's different options for sure in that regard.
Steve, I'm going to fire 2 at you because I think the first one you can do pretty quick. And I know you have a lot of knowledge on both of these things here. So I'll just read you both. The first one is, does coffee break a fast? The second one is, what's the best fish to eat?
So the fish one is very simple. Anytime you buy fish from a grocery store, there's so many loopholes with seafood. Okay. Here's the thing, like 95% of shrimp in the grocery store is from Asia, even though it'll say from the Gulf of Mexico, you know, and they can get away with that. There's no regulations. It's not like someone goes to the supermarket, grabs shrimp and has it tested and is like, wow, these shrimp are Asian shrimp. You've been lying to your customers. That doesn't happen. Salmon is all farm raised, guys. Even if it says wild, it's still farm raised. Even saltwater, quote unquote, wild fish are farm raised. if you go in South America, in the Caribbean, they actually have over the ocean cages, big cages where they have saltwater fish, and they toss the fish the food to get the fish nice and fat. And then they catch the fish, kill the fish, you know, clean it, freeze it, whatever, and have it shipped to the United States. So the best way to eat healthy fish is to catch your own fish. You catch the fish, you stick it, put it on ice right away, then you get it home, clean it right away, and then you vacuum seal it. That is the safest way to eat fish. You're not going to eat fish that farm raised. It's extremely disgusting, and they feed the fish absolute crap, and it's really, really bad for you. We're talking about, you know, as bad as bacon or sausage or cold cuts are for you, farm-raised fish might be just as bad, if not worse, for you. So you really need to learn how to go catch your own fish, and you cannot trust what they say in the supermarket. Your first question about does coffee break a fast? It's not going to kick you out of ketosis, as far as I know. But it does upset your stomach, okay? And part of fasting is to give your stomach a break. So when you're consuming coffee, it is going to affect your stomach. So people who fast and drink coffee will complain about diarrhea. The problem with coffee is it's a diuretic. It's going to dehydrate you, and it's going to be difficult for your body to digest. So part of fasting is digestion, is clearing your system, detoxing your system. So is it going to kick you out of ketosis? Is it going to affect your fat loss? No, it won't. But it will interfere with all the benefits of fasting. It will interfere with your digestive detoxing. So I recommend, if you must drink coffee, you can drink one cup of coffee plain just in the morning. That's it. And then the rest of the day, just water and just electrolytes if you want to get the full benefits of fasting. But if you want to really, really, really get the full benefits, do not drink coffee at all. That would be my opinion on that.
So to me, there's two different types of people that fast that drink coffee. The first one would be the person that just has that one cup in the morning because that's kind of their routine. That's what they wake up and they have their coffee and they like it and that's what it is. That's fine. I have no issue with that at all. The kind of coffee consumption on a fast I don't like is the person that says, okay, I'm going to do a 24-hour fast. And they start to get hungry at, you know, noon, you know, around lunchtime. And then they start drinking more coffee to get rid of that hunger. And then they're okay. And then they start getting hungry again at like 3-4 o'clock. So then they make another pot of coffee. If you're just using the coffee to crush the hunger, that's not good. That's going to cause a lot of issues. That's going to lead to adrenal fatigue. You're going to be dehydrated as shit all day because there's no way you're going to be able to drink enough water to keep up. Your heart's going to be racing all day. It's just not a good idea. So does it kick you out of ketosis? Steve told you, no, it doesn't. Is it going to break a fast? No, it's not going to break a fast. So if you want to drink coffee while fasting, black coffee, I have no problem. Keep it to 1 to 2 cups in the morning. Don't be the guy that's drinking pots all day long.
So now, guys, we're going to move to our final segment, which is weight training. So this guy is saying that he is deployed overseas and he has very limited gym access. His gym that he has where he's at is kind of like one of those gyms at a hotel. That's what he's describing. So he's got pretty much a Smith machine, a pull-down machine, two leg machines, you know, a machine for curls, and two machines for abs. So he doesn't really have much. It's just like, you know, a shitty hotel type of gym. And then he has some dumbbells. So he wants to know, is that going to be good enough for me to get in a proper workout? So Matt, you travel a lot for work, a lot more than me. So what is your experience with this?
I think that's actually not bad, to be honest. If he's got, you know, a Smith machine you can do a lot with. So is it enough to get a proper workout in? Sure. You know, you can stay in shape. You can probably even make some gains, you know, cut some fat, whatever you're trying to do. If that question were to morph into, is that enough that I, you know, I can run a proper cycle and try to gain 10 pounds? No, that's where I would draw the line. But I think, you know, if you're overseas, if that's what you have access to, I'm not sure what kind of food, like if, you know, what kind of quality food the guy has, because that's going to be important too. But you know what? If that's what you have, you're going to be able to stay in shape. What else are you going to do? Nothing? You know, you might as well do it. You might as well do some cardio too. I think that's a great idea. That way, when you get back from being overseas, it's already part of your routine. It's ingrained in you that you need to weight train, and you'll be in good shape. And at that point, you'll be able to go to another gym where you'll have access to all types of different things. Your body won't be used to it, and you should be able to get, you know, a nice little boost at the beginning from switching things up. So absolutely, I'd go for it. All right, let me grab a question. Let me grab a good one here. So this one's a little bit tricky, but he says, how do I gain strength but the fastest way? So that question is a little bit tough because, you know, strength training, and we've kind of talked about strength training before, it's a lot more about, you know, heavy weights, you know, going lower, maybe 3 to 5 reps, you know, resting, you know, 1, 2, 3 minutes between sets, you know, progressing slowly is the key word to build up your strength. How to gain strength the fastest way? I think that's just a way to get injured, to be honest. I think strength training, it's not a race. It's not a fast thing. You know, how fast can the turtle run across the road? Well, not very fast. But somewhere in the world, there is the fastest turtle. But he's probably not going that fast. So strength training, kind of similar, right? You're going to be able to add weight at a certain pace, but it's not like you just go from, you know, on the couch doing nothing to all of a sudden you're, you know, benching 405. That's not really how it works. Steve, you have strength trained. Like, I know you used to be a power lifter. What, do you have any, like, advice? Do you have any, you know, like, what do you think is a good way to look at how do you go up? How much do you go up fast?
If you're hitting a plateau like that, what you need to do is build consistency at a lower weight. So try to get into the 4 to 6 rep range. And I do mean 4 to 6 rep range. Don't do this bullshit where you do like 2, 3 reps on a weight and then you rack it. Because, you know, and your third rep is like barely, you're struggling to get it up. No. Do a legitimate 4 to 6 rep range for weight training. Drop down, and I just want you to do 4 to 6 rep range, whatever weight it is. Build the consistency, and then slowly add 5 pounds to the bar, you know, after a couple weeks. And then after a couple weeks, add another 5 pounds, et cetera, et cetera. And then that's the way you can build your strength back up to a plateau. Another obvious way is to gain weight, to gain mass. So they have, you know, I was a power lifter, but I would power lift in my weight class and I'd have to basically cut down 2 or 3 pounds a day of my meat to make weight of the lower weight class. Because if I was to compete in the weight class above me, I would be going against guys who weighed 5 to 10 pounds more than me, you see? So that didn't make any sense. So at some point in my powerlifting, I decided, you know what? I'm done trying to keep cutting down because it would get to the point where I'd have to lose 4 or 5 pounds to make weight. So I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to, instead of trying to cut down, you know, the day before the, you know, my weigh-in, I'm just going to just gain mass and just start competing in the next weight class. So maybe it's time for you to do the same thing. gain a little bit more mass on your frame, and that will push you over top as well. Because the more you weigh, the more weight you're going to be able to push. So it's all connected. So next one is he wants to know, some advice on chest. He's saying his chest, he has a bird chest. He's a pretty young guy, and he wants to know how he can build his chest. He's very self-conscious, especially during beach season. So Matt, I don't know if you were like me, but when I was a teenager, I had a bird chest as well. And the way I solved the bird chest was by weight training, doing compound lifts, bench pressing, doing incline, doing militaries, building the shoulders. But I kind of outgrew that bird chest by weight training and also by maturing. So Matt, were you the same way?
Yeah, I was. And I got through that pretty quick. And I think it's because everybody jokes Monday is chest day everywhere, right? And it's one of those things where you put a lot of focus on it because you like chest day. And because it is Monday, you're kind of refreshed. It's a new week. You're ready to go. So you put maximum effort. It's funny for me, though, I saw the most progress from doing a lot of different lifts, not just, say a regular bench press. I got a lot when I started doing incline, decline, and mixing in dumbbells. So I think it's going to be just probably about volume at this point. Make sure you're eating enough, obviously, especially being a younger guy. Metabolism's really high. A lot of you younger guys don't eat enough, even the guys that think they do. Whole foods, stop worrying about getting your shakes in. So start, fix your diet, plan it around whole, clean foods, good protein sources, and just go with volume. Maybe separate it. Maybe don't do a push day, where you got chest and triceps and, maybe shoulders. Maybe just do a chest day on its own, and do that once a week. That way you really crush it, and then you give it the other 6 days to recover and grow. So those would be my suggestions.
All right, guys. I know, Matt, we have more questions that you guys submitted. We just don't have time to get to them all. But don't worry. Next week, we will hit the ones we didn't hit this time. So keep the questions coming, guys. I don't know how many questions we answered, Matt, on this show. About 20 of them, it seemed, right? So
yeah, I still got a whole list here from you guys.
So, gosh, you guys are like working us, I think. I think you guys have pleasure in working us. But we really enjoy doing this, and we appreciate you guys listening. Keep the questions coming. Till next time, have a good one.